Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending March the 29th. Reading today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines today are consultation on future of hospital is finished, employer jailed for asbestos offences, and what's in store for the shopping centre. So, may we have the first headline, please, Heather?
Consultation on the future of hospitals is finished. Following the end of a three-month consultation on the future of hospitals in central Hampshire, an NHS boss has thanked people for getting involved. The consultation on the £700 million to £900 million plans, including a new specialist acute hospital in Basingstoke, removal of Winchester's A&E departments, and refurbishment of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, closed on Sunday, March the 17th. Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "We would like to thank everyone who took the opportunity to get involved in the consultation for the new hospital programme. We have held more than 20 in-person public listening events and more than 8 online, as well as many face-to-face meetings with community groups that we've been invited to attend. We've also organised pop-up stands in more than 10 different locations, held drop-in exhibitions, had one-to-one telephone interviews with people, and held focus groups with people across the area. An independent research company will now collate and analyse all the responses we've received, including what we heard at our events, focus groups, and in telephone surveys. The results of the consultation questionnaire and feedback we received via other methods, including in writing or by telephone. The independent research company will develop a consultation report, which will provide a comprehensive picture of the views of those who have responded, and we will receive the final report in due course. A petition to save Winchester's A&E has continued to grow following the end of the consultation, with more than 21,000 signatures. Dr. Alloway previously assured residents that potential options to keep an emergency department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Romsey Road had been exhaustively explored. However, doctors believe having an emergency department in Winchester and Basingstoke would not be clinically safe nor sustainable due to having to spread consultants across two sites. Under the proposals, Winchester's A&E will be replaced with a 24/7 urgent treatment centre, which Hampshire NHS leaders believe would be able to treat around 60% of patients currently turning to the emergency department. Winchester residents have also criticised decisions to downgrade the maternity department from consultant to midwife-led.
Now, John.
Employer jailed for asbestos offences. A man has been jailed for exposing two builders to a potentially lethal asbestos to cut costs on a Winchester construction site. Stephen Davies, director of the Cavendish Winchester Limited, was sentenced to 8 months in prison. Southampton Crown Court heard how he employed John Mills and Stephen Mills to strip the inside of the former office building in Winnell Industrial Estate ahead of a project to convert it into student flats. However, the 58-year-old of Chichester, West Sussex, failed to tell them that the building contained deadly asbestos. Davies's fellow company director, Neil Bolton, 56, of Hillgrove, West Sussex, was given a suspended sentence of 4 months. Both men pleaded guilty. The court heard they got quotes of between £70,000 and £260,000 to remove the asbestos safely. The two builders cost a mere fraction of that, at £25,000. The waste was disposed of in 16 skips. The builders were not aware it was asbestos insulating board, which the court heard is one of the most deadly forms of the material. Kate Harney, prosecuting on behalf of the Health and Safety Executive, said, "The project was to renovate the centre to create student accommodation. The building had a very old asbestos management survey from 2010. It was not fit for purpose. A more invasive survey was needed. That was made clear to the defendants on a number of occasions. They had expressed knowledge of the potential asbestos and how to manage that going forward. 10 tons of asbestos was initially removed. None of the work was notified to the Health and Safety Executive." Ms. Harney added that Davies was regularly on site for the 5-week job in November 2019. Bolton was described as the money man in charge of the company's finances. Quentin Hunt, mitigating, told the court that the company was set up solely for the construction project. He said, "The company was a special purposes vehicle for this project only. The project failed, and the company has losses of £748,000. The project was ill-fated. Both defendants accept their culpability. It was admittedly a cost-cutting measure." Mr. Hunt added that both men lost money on the project, with Davies putting in £190,000 and Bolton £125,000. Sentencing Davies, who has worked in the building trade for 40 years, Judge Peter Henry said, "Your deliberate decision to put workers in danger can only be met by a custodial sentence." Davies was jailed for 8 months with no order for costs due to the custodial sentence. He remained motionless as the judge jailed him. Bolton was given a 4-month prison sentence, suspended for 12 months. He must also complete 250 hours of unpaid work within 12 months and pay costs of £5,123.70 within 3 months. The company was fined £30,000.
Thank you, John. Now, Jane.
And what's in store for shopping centre? A year after the Brooks Shopping Centre was sold to Gentian, the new team has revealed what it envisages for the centre's long-term future. The Winchester Shopping Centre has been under the management of Yarrow Estates for just over a year. In that time, benches have been added, CCTV has been increased to improve safety. The centre started closing half an hour earlier to save electricity. Community groups have performed and new businesses such as Sports Direct have been welcomed in. The team, led by Simon Turpin, director of Yarrow Estates, marketing manager Vicky Oliver and Lisa Evans, centre manager, hope to get more involved with the community by working with organisations like Winchester Business Improvement District and the City Council. The centre was fully let for the first time over Christmas, for the first time in decades, and Mr. Turpin hopes it will be again by the end of the year, with his sights set on a coffee shop and potentially a health and beauty business to fill the empty units. Mr. Turpin said, "We've been doing a lot to try and rebrand the Brooks. It's about changing perceptions. Winchester is phenomenal for high-end, but that is not everyone's budget. Very proud to be the more sort of value offer. I would like to see more brands here. A lot of people have this downer on the Brooks and we're trying to reinvent that. We're building better relationships with our tenants. They are our business partners. Without them, we don't have a business. The service charges here used to be way too high. We have to be dealing with affordable and realistic rents. To see a place with so few voids is very rare. It's a very vibrant retail centre. After the Cathedral, the Great Hall and the City Hall, the Brooks is the largest public enclosed space in the city centre. This shopping centre is overdue a renaissance. You don't have to come in and buy things, you can come in and just be. It's lovely to see more mums and dads spending time in here with their kids. It's a safe and welcoming space with great brands. We want something that looks attractive from the outside and is welcome inside and is part of the whole Winchester scheme. really want to work with local suppliers. We want to be very responsible employers and enjoyable place to work. Vicky Oliver said, we've met with local organisations and music community groups. We can give them a place to showcase. We're trying to build up a calendar of events that people can bring their children to. We've got lots going on, some with Winchester Bid and some of our own stuff. It's about affordability. We've got to find shops that complement the offer we already have here and finding the right terms for them to make it an attractive offer. We are all proud to be part of one team taking it forward. It's like an indoor park where people can come out in the cold and children can play. At Cowfest, I was speaking to parents here, and they were all saying that they've noticed improvements, and it feels a lot safer, cleaner, and with more shops coming in. It's a big testament to us that they want to bring their kids here. Our social media following is going up too. There have been lots of tweaks. We're listening to our tenants and customers and the changes that they want. The first couple of years are very much about that, and then we can start expanding on that and shining in other ways. We're stripping it back to basics to start building it back up again. Sarah Davis, manager of Winchester Bid, said, the Brooks Shopping Centre is a valuable addition to Winchester, providing an indoor environment for a lot of national brands in the city. As well as Primark, TK Maxx, HMV and Waterstones, new stores like Sports Direct bring a whole new audience to the area. And not forgetting the independent businesses like Mars, Ballet Pointe and 99 Vintage, which cater to a younger, more diverse audience. At Winchester Bid, we look forward to working with the shops in the centre to promote our forthcoming Bunny Hop Trail, as well as seeing which businesses will fill the units that are currently vacant. The Little Gym is next in line to move into the Brooks, with a couple of other empty units being marketed by Goadsby. The team also hopes to improve its accessibility. And this is accompanied by two photographs, one of the outside of the Brooks with the path going up and the steps going down and Primark in one corner, and the other with a shop to let at the centre. Goadsby Shop to Let Coffee to Go.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who... excuse me. If you know someone who is sight impaired... and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we will... excuse me. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum first person and editorial comment. Then we will continue with items of general news. Here are the death notices. Barrett Alexander, or Alex Barrett, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on 17th of March 2024, aged 57. Cousins, Jean Nay Sherwood Cousins, passed away peacefully at home in Twyford on Wednesday the 13th of March 2024, aged 86 years. Darlington, Norma Darlington, passed away peacefully at Home Park Nursing Home, Eastleigh, on the 12th of March 2024, aged 85. Eagling, Peter David Eagling, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday the 11th of March 2024, aged 81 years. Gibbons. Gibbons, Jeremy Stewart KC Gibbons, died peacefully on the 16th of March 2024 in Winchester. Johnson, Andrew Johnson, died 20th of February 2024 at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 57. Massey, Ian Trevor Massey, who died on the 20th of March 2024. Piper Roderick, Roderick Piper, passed away at his home in Winchester on the 14th of February 24, aged 80. Underwood, Margaret Rose Underwood, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 3rd of March 2024, aged 92 years. York, Simon York, suddenly but peacefully at home on the 19th of March 2024. And Samuel John Waddington passed away peacefully at home on the 3rd of March 2024, aged 26 years. Andrews, James Edward, or Jim Andrews, suddenly on the 8th of March 2024 at Southampton General Hospital, aged 93. Now, Christian comment this week, written by Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church, and read by Heather.
And Nigel Hemming writes about the meaning of Easter. Last week I read about a shop in Sandy in the Orkneys where they accidentally took delivery of more Easter eggs than the entire population of the island. Instead of 80 eggs, the owner had inadvertently ordered 80 cases of eggs. Left with the challenge of working out how to distribute so many Easter eggs among so few people, he held a competition to raise money for charity and allow one lucky winner to take 100 eggs home. As a child in the 70s who wasn't really allowed sweets at all, I can still remember the excitement of being given a whole chocolate egg to myself on Easter Day and the frustration of being encouraged to make it last. Chocolate eggs still feel a long way away, culturally, from the story of Easter, but there is a connection. The egg is a symbol of new birth, representing Jesus' resurrection from the dead and invitation to new life. On the other hand, the tradition of the Easter bunny seems to come right out of left field in theological terms. Originating in German folklore from the 1600s, he's a kind of Santa figure, or judge, who brings eggs, sweets and toys to children who've been obedient. Well-meaning, perhaps, but a long way from the truth, mystery and nuance of the original Easter story. While there is plenty of historical evidence for Jesus' crucifixion, the theological meaning of his undeserved and cruel death remains central to Christian faith, as the Apostle John describes in his first letter. When Jesus served as a sacrifice for our sins, he solved the sin problem for good, not only ours, but the whole world's, 1 John 2:2. In dying for the sins of humanity, Jesus created a pathway back to God, which simply wasn't possible before. And then, in his miraculous resurrection, he defeated the powers of death and presented the world with an invitation to new life that is open to all. While the younger generation will have fun searching for eggs this weekend, there are plenty of people who are genuinely searching for meaning and stability in an otherwise crazy world. And it's meaning that can be found in Jesus, whose story reaches its zenith at Easter. The brilliant thing about Jesus, though, is that he doesn't wait for us to find him like some kind of cosmic game of hide-and-seek. The story of Gospels is that Jesus came to earth to find us. He came to seek out those who were in need of connection and restoration, hope and life. As Luke puts it, "For the Son of Man came to find and restore the lost," Luke 19:10. If you'd like to know more and you're around Winchester this Good Friday, people from local churches will be out in the cathedral grounds between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. giving away eggs and sharing the good news of Easter. There will be a storyteller, music and crafts for kids. Why not go and see what it's all about? Nigel Hemming, senior pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. Now, there are 10 letters this week, beginning with one read by John. Thanks to all the correspondents, you can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester 2SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860 836. So, John.
This is the first of, I think it's 4 letters about the Jane Austen statue. This one, from Peter J. Smith, is entitled "Why We Need a Statue of Jane Austen." why we need to mark the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen with a statue at the cathedral. Pride and Prejudice has sold 20 million copies worldwide in 200 years in continuous print, not forgetting five other novels in 40 different languages, never out of print. Jane Austen has inspired countless adaptations of her stories and characters. They have become a cultural touchstone, referenced in everything from Bridget Doane's Diary to Clueless. It would seem fitting for a statue in Winchester Cathedral grounds to honour her, as she was highly critical of the law and conventions of her time, whereby women were denied many of the freedoms and opportunities the letter writers and all British women now have, making her an early feminist. Making a statue of William Walker, suggested by writers, seems strange and out of touch against our Hampshire author, who is still trending 200 years after her death. Most Winchester residents and worldwide visitors would be filled with joy seeing one of the world's greatest authors as a statue. That's from Peter J. Smith, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
And Edward Fennell writes, given all the hoo-ha about the proposed statue of Jane Austen in the cathedral grounds, with even Jeremy Clarkson chipping in over the weekend in the Sunday Times, maybe the cathedral authorities should review to whom they have a debt, who merits memorialisation in its precincts. Foremost on that list, I would suggest, should be those people who were excluded from ever having a speaking part in a Jane Austen novel, the agricultural labourers of southern England, who generated in large part the tithes and wealth upon which the church and the gentry thrived. As we approach the bicentenary of the Captain Swing riots in Hampshire, which culminated in a series of executions of working men in the yard of what is now the Wetherspoons jailhouse in Jury Street, the cathedral might like to reflect on its role in the story. Implored to intervene on behalf of those to be punished, the cathedral turned its back and washed its hands of any appeal. The youngest of those hanged was Henry Cook, aged 19, from Micheldever. The church refused to allow his burial in consecrated ground. A representative statue in his name and the many hundreds of other exploited and disregarded Hampshire agricultural labourers and their families might now be appropriate. And that was from Edward Fennell, coordinator, Captain Swing Riots Bicentenary Commemoration, Egbert Road, Hyde.
Many visitors from the world visit Winchester Cathedral to visit her tomb. She spent her last days in a house in College Street, where there is a plaque stating the house was her resting place, where she passed away, aged 41, on July the 18th, 1817, in Winchester. A statue in Inner Close, near her resting place, should be erected to celebrate her life. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Austen's statue is the simple title of this letter from Jeremy Baker. We had a very interesting meeting last Monday in the Wessex Centre at the Cathedral to discuss the proposed statue. The reports in the papers, the Daily Telegraph, the Times and the Hampshire Chronicle, do not give a balanced report. Elizabeth Proudman and her claque were very vocal about the inappropriateness of a statue in the Inner Close. This appeared to be because the Inner Close had been a private space for the monks before the dissolution of the monasteries. If the argument stands, no lay person would have access to the Inner Close today. The argument is ludicrous, or seems so to me. Her views did not meet with much support at the meeting. I am a Jane Austen guide at the cathedral. When taking tours from College Street, where she died, to the cathedral to follow her funeral procession route, we go through the Inner Close. It would be particularly relevant to pass a statue of Jane Austen. Some thought the statue should portray Jane in outdoor clothes. Martin Jennings felt the statue should be relevant to her writing process at Chawton. He described the statue as showing her having risen to her feet in front of her writing table, having been disturbed. This explains the motion of her dress and her stance protecting her writing area. The statue has been considered in depth by the sculptor, the cathedral, and the council. We are in safe hands, and I myself applaud the project. So writes Jeremy Baker, Halterworth Lane, Rumsey.
And on a different subject, G.N. Barrett writes, discrimination. The rest of British farmers should give our wonderful Welsh farmers full support. Agricultural land is in decline, meaning fresh fruit and vegetables will be unaffordable in the very near future. Families will not be able to afford fresh fruit and veg to give to their children, the health department is stating. If authorities want more land to go back to nature, then take it from the large mansions, stately homes, and those of the National Trust. Why should a small number of personnel be able to look out of their windows on a glorious garden while many are suffering severe hardships? Class discrimination at its highest. And that was from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
And this letter also has a heading, Speak Up, and it's written by Jock MacDonald. So, the director of the Institute of Fiscal Studies, the IFS, has called out both the Conservatives and Labour parties for their conspiracy of silence in not acknowledging the scale of choices and trade puffs that will face us after the election. He goes on to say, if I am sceptical about Mr. Hunt's ability to stick to his current spending plans, I am at least that sceptical that Rachel Reeves will preside over deep cuts in public service spending, The Spectator, March the 8th. Unfortunately, there is no sign that the Liberal Democrats, at a national level, will do anything different, and I bet Reform and Greens won't do it either. All the political parties are frightened of us. We are the electorate. As the top economist, Sir Dieter Helm says, we want our cake and eat it. Helm has written a very important book, Legacy, How to Build the Sustainable EKO Economy. Since he is the Oxford Professor of Political Economy with a specialism in energy, we need to listen to him and read what he says. His book concerns another topic, which at the party political level, probably again for fear of the electorate, is also treated with a sort of conspiracy of silence. Pussyfooting might be a better description. That topic is the climate crisis, and the problem which gets in the way of our dealing with it is our consumption. For it is our personal consumption that causes other countries to burn fossil fuels to manufacture goods and services that please us. Obviously, this is a worldwide problem, most clearly illustrated by the fact that in 2023, 80% of the globe's energy was produced by fossil fuels. The very same percentage as in 1992. Statistical Review of World Energy, Forward, Key Facts, page 3. Some people may think that the letter column of a local newspaper is not the place to discuss this topic. But it so happened that Helm gave a talk in Winchester in June 2022 on this very subject in a hall packed full of students from across the city, Jock MacDonald's St Cross Road, Winchester.
Wrong turn, writes Roger Stevens. Mr. Sherwood asks, where did it all go wrong? Chronicle Letters, March the 14th. It went wrong when we turned our backs on dull politicians who were talented, careful and caring. Instead, we elected TV celebrities and personalities who were thought would be fun. Some we elected just for a laugh. We all knew most of these people were manifestly unfit for the office, and so it has proved. They surrounded themselves with people in their own image, so our government became chaotic, dissolute and derelict. Our roads are full of potholes. Motorway bridges fall down. We have record NHS waiting lists, our rivers and beaches become ever more polluted, and we have lockdown parties in 10 Downing Street. Our industry has fallen into such decay that it cannot replenish our own military supplies, let alone support our friends. The Fun Liz Truss budget cost our country £30 billion. Not many felt it was fun when they suffered a huge increase in their mortgage repayments. We are spending £106 billion building a new railway line that was supposed to connect London to Birmingham, Manchester and Leeds. In the event, it runs parallel to two existing railways between London and Birmingham, where it peters out. The existing lines are to be all but closed to force people to use the new line at greater expense, and the service between Manchester and London will take longer and have fewer seats. There have always been people who identified as furniture, but we put them in government. We made the wrong turn. It's all entirely our own fault. That's from Roger Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton.
And Lisa Griffiths writes, I'm writing in response to the front page article about the Lib Dem MP candidate believing he can overturn all the hospital consultations which have taken place, Chronicle March the 14th, ignoring the past work done where the sites he suddenly thinks can be magically reintroduced. We don't like the answer, so we'll stop everything and make sure no one benefits and watch over continued decline. My heart sinks in despair. This seems to be typical of the current City Council administration and a Lib Dem trait to oppose everything and achieve nothing. What has been achieved is to complete three projects which the previous Conservative administration had commenced. They completed the new Sport and Leisure Centre, built the car park on the old Mint site at Bar End, rebuilt the sports hub for Hyde residents at King George V playing fields, and eventually commenced work on the new health centre. There is, however, a risk of making progress, and the risk of losing votes seems to mean absolutely nothing happens. Vote Lib Dem and make sure your life doesn't get better. No progress in Central Winchester regeneration, the old leisure centre, station approach, or the bus station. Our toilets are absolutely dire for visitors. The new car park and housing in Alresford, no progress. Our NHS services will not see improvements by denying the opportunity for £900 million to be spent ensuring the best healthcare is delivered here. Flick Drummond, when standing for Meon Valley, promised three things: to address the issues with poor broadband for rural communities, to see a regeneration project for Waterlooville Town Centre underway, and tackle the issues with noisy motorbikes on the A32 and A272. These are positive changes, making a difference to people's lives and much appreciated by those who benefit from them. We need to see improvements for residents, and that is exactly what Flick has always fought for as an MP and has delivered. Lisa Griffiths, Appledown Close, Alresford.
David Selby writes, I would like to give my wholehearted support to your correspondent, Sally Penton's well-argued case for not moving the proposed new hospital to Dummer, and to Danny Chambers for spotting an opportunity that did not exist when sites were being considered for the new hospital. I have not responded to the consultation over the hospital because it seemed to me more of a sales document, persuading people what a good idea it was, while making some vague statements about what the existing Winchester Hospital would be used for. The powers that be seemed to be sold on building the new hospital in the middle of the countryside, but with the availability of the Sir John Moore site, common sense should prevail, and the advantages of the barracks should be assessed. I have had recent experiences that rather undermine the sense of placing a new hospital adjacent to Junction 7. Firstly, I underwent treatment on a daily basis at the existing Basingstoke Hospital for several weeks. I, like Sally Penton, live in South Wanston, and I often wondered how long it would have taken me to travel to the hospital. Requiring 3 buses, especially if, like ours, they are on an hourly service. A car was essential to meet the very precise appointment times. Secondly, more recently, I was taken to Winchester A&E by ambulance and received excellent service despite the fact that they were terribly busy. This posed another problem, as my wife is unable to drive our car. I would not have expected to be taken back home by ambulance, and I was not properly dressed to travel by bus or even taxi. Not every individual has a car, especially if you are elderly. And if, like me, the car driver is taken ill, it is out of action. If, unlike me, your visit to A&E requires a longer stay in hospital, and some of the above applies, visits from your nearest and dearest which would aid recovery would be almost impossible, except at great expense. Building a new hospital at Dummer is probably now somewhat redundant when a better site could be available for what basically should be a Winchester hospital. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
And this last letter is on the same subject of hospital. It's by David Briggs. What a breath of fresh air from Danny Chambers, the Liberal Democrat candidate. Of course a new hospital should be built on the Army's Flower Down barracks site rather than houses. It is a large government-owned plot of land with easy access for ambulances, staff, patients and others from all directions via the A34, A303, M3, including the city itself. The old hospital site is congested on a steep hillside, making internal movement difficult, and with much of it too ancient to be used sensibly. New houses could then be built in its place on this city centre site, and forgive me if this is a revolutionary thought, the residents could walk to the station, offices, shops, cafes, pubs, restaurants, events, and the new leisure centre, and not use their cars, which they would be sorely tempted to use if they were isolated nearly 3 miles out of town. Isn't that what our fine city council wants? Why have 3 half-baked hospitals, Basingstoke, J7 and Winchester, when you can have 2 proper ones with probably little change to staffing logistics? I, and I think many others, will vote for anyone who will act upon such practical common sense. That letter is from David Briggs, Harestock Road, Winchester.
Thank you. And now, Heather has got Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
I've got 2 items written for Belgarum. Group tours fire station. A group from Redeemer Winchester toured Winchester Fire Station. There's a picture of several chaps standing round gazing with interest at a fire engine. A church group visited Winchester Fire Station to learn about the vital services its firefighters provide. Members of Redeemer Winchester met the crew at the Winnell Station last month. Station manager Jamie Cousins explained how the station is run with a full-time team and supported by trained on-call volunteers from the surrounding area. The group was shown around the station, including the changing rooms, dorms, mess, and of course the poles used to get to the vehicles as quickly as possible. Mr. Cousins said there was noticeable disappointment from the group when told going down the pole was no longer part of the tour. The crew showed the group the different vehicles they use depending on the situation. Call-outs range from fires and road accidents to dangerous chemical spills and cats stuck up trees. They demonstrated the latest technologies on the new fire engines, which allow for greater speed and effectiveness when dealing with situations. And finally, a community safety officer spoke with the group about the safe and well visits they offer and how to improve safety at home, including regularly checking smoke alarms and what to do and more importantly, what not to do in the case of a home fire. And the second item is town-made toys returning home. And it has a museum chairman, a smiling gent with glasses, holding two dolls, one looking a little bit like Queen Victoria and the other apparently looking like Prince Albert. This Easter, Alsford Museum will be celebrating the arrival of two new members of the royal family. Obviously, the paparazzi will be out in force to see them for the first time on Easter Monday at the museum in the town's old fire station in Broad Street. Young Queen Victoria and Prince Albert are the latest acquisitions for the museum, which is building a collection of the town's most famous exports. Museum Trust Chairman Roy Gentry said, "We're being contacted from around the world by people who want to return Alsford Crafts toys to their rightful home. The museum is open 4 to 11pm on Easter Monday, April the 1st, and the May and August bank holiday Mondays, and entry is free."
First Person this week is written by Khalid Aziz, and he's entitled it "The Eyes Have It, at Long Last." 45 years is the age at which, if you haven't had to wear glasses, usually you will find yourself reaching for cheap reading specs in your local supermarket. I managed to stave off the inevitable until I was 52. Then the rot set in. It started off well enough. For a good few years, I rubbed along with 1.5 magnification. Then my sight started to go downhill. In the last 18 months, I found myself needing ever stronger glasses. Eventually, I was up to a magnification of 3 and had begun to have issues with my long sight. The collective banditry of high street opticians — it seems the only difference between them and Dick Turpin is that they don't wear masks and carry guns — fitted me with a pair of varifocals at an extortionate cost of several hundreds of pounds. Returning a year later, I was told my eyes had further deteriorated and I would need my prescription changed to 3.5 times. Time to look again. By some kind of ocular serendipity, it appeared I was now continually surrounded by people who had had surgical lens replacements. This operation used to be reserved for those with cataracts, age-related cloudiness that eventually can lead to total blindness if not treated. I had been informed that I had cataracts in both eyes, but they were too small to qualify for referral to the NHS for free treatment. On further inquiry, I discovered you had to be virtually purblind before you qualified. Was this an example of age-related rationing, with the state relying on so many people dropping off the twig before they got round to having their cataracts removed? Even if you did qualify, you could only have a static lens, no varifocals for the common man. You couldn't even pay the difference for a multifocal lens. So I looked at the private option. Health insurance doesn't cover it either, so I had to dip into savings. Friends who had already shelled out several thousand on new lenses pronounced the surgery the best thing they had ever done. "I cannot get over the colours I'm seeing," they said. "Everything is so sharp, near and far." My eyes were getting worse and worse. I needed one set of glasses for the computer, another for reading, which I do a lot of for both business and pleasure. The varifocals were not easy in practice. I reverted to two pairs of glasses, which was okay, until you came to shopping, when you had to juggle two sets of glasses while reading the small print on whatever it was you were thinking of buying. Off I went to an eye specialist. He explained the potential joy of the Symphony lens, the latest from the United States firm Johnson & Johnson. This high-tech innovation uses Fresnel lens principles to offer an amazing range of sight. Excited at the prospect of casting aside my specs, I signed up. You get one eye done at a time, with a few weeks in between. A squeamish friend in the pub was doubled up in conniptions as he contemplated the thought of a scalpel bearing down on the naked eye. "Don't tell me they don't knock you out." "No, no," said I. "Apparently it's all done under local anaesthetic." I had to catch him as he swooned. The surgery is nothing if not weird. A local anaesthetic means there's no pain, although you're aware of some discomfort. "Just keep looking at the bright lights," said my surgeon. So I did, and it was all over in under 15 minutes. Then it's a regime of eye drops for 3 weeks and an eye patch at night. Within a day, I had realised why I had paid for HD TV. What's more, I'm writing this with no specs for the first time in nearly two decades.
Terrific. Okay, now Jane has the editorial comment,
which is builder's cost cutting measure to risk to life. This week's front page story makes for interesting reading. Some may think the judge was harsh to impose an immediate prison sentence on a man with 40 years behind him in the building trade. A man who had never been in trouble or before the courts in his life now faces 8 months behind bars for risking the life of two builders just to cut costs. The new Cavendish Centre is now finished with modern student flats, but the start of the project, as the courts heard, was a very different story. Stephen Davies, along with his fellow company director Neil Bolton, chose the cheap option of getting two builders to strip the building in Winnall instead of getting licensed asbestos removers to do it in a safe manner. The cost may have been cheaper in the short term, but very costly in the long term. The punishment for Davies is severe, but think about the two builders who had no idea about the toxic material they were dealing with. Asbestos exposure can often be lethal, with conditions arising such as mesothelioma and asbestosis. We can only hope the exposure was not significant and that the two builders can steer clear of medical complications.
And now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Heather.
Procession marks the start of Holy Week. A large crowd joined the Winchester Palm Sunday procession on Sunday, March the 24th. The procession began at the sun-drenched Winchester Castle outside the Great Hall. Participants then walked down the High Street before ending at the Cathedral. Palm Sunday marks the beginning of Holy Week and commemorates Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where he was welcomed by the people waving palm branches. The Cathedral describes Holy Week as the most demanding, challenging, and exciting week in the Christian year. Through the events of Holy Week across time and eternity, Christ reaches to us with healing, forgiveness, and love.
Pantry's Prom Help. A Winchester food bank is helping ensure that all children can go to their school prom by renting out clothing. According to data from the Child Poverty Action Group, not all children finishing their GCSEs or A-levels go to their prom due to not being able to afford the right clothes. Mm. The charity estimates that clothes, hair and makeup for the celebrations cost families upwards of £200. Winchester Community Pantry at Unit 12 wants to help those in need by offering prom dresses, suits and accessories. There is no need to book. Those who want to use the service can borrow an item and pledge to return it. Community Pantry Manager Lara Tarrant said, "We ensure a warm, welcoming atmosphere where we all have a lot of fun and make the kids feel glamorous and special." Mm-hmm. Schools across the Winchester district will be having their end-of-year proms in June and July. Unit 12 held its first prom event in February. A second prom clothing event will be held on Friday, April the 5th from 2pm to 4pm, whilst a third event is scheduled for an unconfirmed date in May. Unit 12 is asking that families consider donating dresses, shoes, suits and accessories in good condition. Those interested in helping can volunteer at the prom fitting sessions or by offering to take donated dresses to the dry cleaners. The community pantry is also hoping for sponsorship to cover the rental of the space to safely store the clothes. Johnson's has already pledged to be a sponsor, offering to dry clean every item for free.
Cool. And here we have £4.2 million of new bus routes on the way. More bus routes will be coming to Winchester and Romsey, it has been confirmed. Hampshire County Council, as part of the Bus Service Improvement Partnership, has allocated £4.2 million government funding on Stagecoach South, Go South East and First Solent. The money will enable them to increase service levels on 15 Hampshire bus routes, resulting in more day and evening services, as well as three new services introduced on Sundays. The funding comes from Hampshire's £7.2 million share of the Department for Transport's Bus Service Improvement Plan, plus money, and has been awarded in line with the DfT's direction that the majority should be used to protect existing commercial services that might otherwise see reduced timetables, and to fund more frequent services. The Blue Star 1 between Winchester and Southampton will run every 15 minutes on weekdays and Saturdays. There will be additional evening weekday services and new late night services in each direction on Friday and Saturday evenings. Additional evening services will operate on the Blue Star 4 between Romsey and Southampton. Blue Star is also set to introduce an earlier outbound journey on the Blue Star 4 from Southampton to Romsey on weekdays. The Stagecoach service 66 between Romsey and Winchester will improve to every 30 minutes, Monday to Saturday daytime. Councillor Nick Adams-King, Executive Member for Universal Services at Hampshire County Council, said, "This is a significant boost for the bus network in Hampshire, which will help more people to make the choice to leave the car at home and to travel more easily and economically to get to and from work, college, shops or for an evening out, which in turn will help support the local economy. Coupled with the government's support in capping single journey fares to £2 a trip, means this is a tremendous opportunity for more people to step on board, give bus travel a try and experience the convenience." The County Council has confirmed additional bus services improvement plan funding for promoting bus travel. Bus operators will be introducing the additional services from April onwards. Seven bus routes will see an increase in daytime bus frequency. A number of other routes will see later or frequent buses in the evenings, and a total of nine local bus routes will see services supported to continue at existing levels. And that's accompanied by a very welcome photo of one of the Blue Star buses just passing through Winchester.
15 almshouses declared open. There were celebrations last week as 15 new almshouses were officially opened in Winchester. St John's Winchester's new accommodation in Colebrook Street was opened with an event on Wednesday, March the 20th. A plaque was unveiled by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, St John's CEO, Clive Cook, and the Chair of Trustees, Roger Bright. Work started to convert the site, which used to be staff accommodation for the Wessex Hotel, in March 2021. The building at 108 Colebrook Street was also renovated and turned into two one-bedroom flats, a one-bedroom maisonette, communal area and assisted bathroom. Located across five sites in the city, St John's Winchester Almshouses provide an affordable, supportive and safe living environment for people over 60. The charity is looking for tenants for the remaining vacancies, and a recent application process has had scores of entries.
Small school will close. A Hampshire primary school will close this summer due to a lack of children in the area. Hampshire County Council has agreed to close Ampfield Church of England Primary School in Rumsey in August. The decision was made by the Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, Councillor Edward Heron, after an informal five-week public consultation in autumn last year and a five-week statutory consultation which closed on March the 1st. The school's governing body formally requested the consultation process in agreement with the Diocese of Winchester, following concerns about the school's low pupil numbers and the implications for its future sustainability. During the statutory public notice period, 14 responses were received. One comment said, "Cannot see why there is a consultation on the closure. Decline since new head teacher in post. HCC has shown no thought or concern for the parents or children. Situation poorly handled and executed."
And here we have Deli's recipe for perfect end to working week. A city centre cafe has launched a small plates menu for after hours, and it's the perfect way to end the working week. Open House Deli is now open late on a Friday, giving people the chance to unwind with some drinks and indulgent food before heading home. Deli Lates at the cafe in King's Walk celebrates seasonal and local produce, and each plate is utterly beautiful. The cafe's vibe is also great after a busy day at work, with plenty of wiggle room between each table, providing quite an intimate experience. Although they're called small plates, I left feeling incredibly full and satisfied, although we did order a lot. The cafe has a fantastic selection of vegetarian tapas that will leave even a fussy carnivore wanting more, proven by experience. The menu was so good that my boyfriend said carnivore and I didn't even realise there wasn't any meat on the menu. It also caters well to other dietary needs and choices, such as gluten-free and vegan. We opted for some flatbread and hummus to get us started, before moving on to the croquettes, vegan andouille and leek ravioli, and honey-roasted carrots. The old Winchester croquettes are made with Leiben cheese, which has built up an excellent reputation as an independent foodie in Hampshire. All the dips with every dish were wonderful, but the deli's own mayonnaise served with croquettes was especially Moorish. The honey-roasted carrots with whipped feta was a heavenly combination and packed with flavour. All the little extras, such as pistachios, mint chervil and pomegranate molasses, gave such a depth of taste. The ravioli, with dough handmade by the in-house chefs, had a huge kick to it, but it was delicious with the cashew parmesan and early harvest olive oil. After quite a rich selection of food, the fruity rhubarb dessert was the perfect refresher, before finishing it all off with an Open House Deli favourite, the Snickers Slice. For anyone who gets a little impatient waiting for their food, the Eco Store is a great place to browse in between plates. Alternatively, you can keep sipping on that wine cocktail, or raspberry kombucha in my case. Beck Smith, Open House Deli ownership, launched the deli late in January, almost 2 years from when the cafe opened. She said, "Well, we thought it was a great time to try something new so we could build the momentum ready for when the weather is better. We've had an amazing response. Everyone has loved the food. Deli Lates is available from 4 to 8 p.m. every Friday. Small plate prices range from £3.50 to £8. And if you're not salivating already, this has a photo behind it of Beck Smith with the chef, Jamie Daniels, and another chef from Open House. And behind them are shelves full of food, which you can also buy in there by the looks of it. All sorts of very interesting varieties of food.
Mayor's Award honours area's unsung heroes. Hundreds gathered at Winchester Guildhall for the annual Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards. More than 100 certificates were presented by Mayor Councillor Angela Clear. Among those recognised at the event on Thursday, March the 7th, were, and this is a long list, Mitchell Dever Community Lunch Club, Blue Apple Theatre, First Wickham Scout Group, First Bishop's Waltham Scout Leaders, Whiteley Wanderers Football Team, Winchester Bereavement Support, South Wanston Sustainability, Bishop's Waltham On-Call Firefighters, Adrian, Andrew and Brian, Winchester District Citizens Advice, Yanis and Gary from Idverd, Sarah Lewin from Key Changes Music Therapy, Winchester Beacon Volunteers, and Tamsin Ward, who works with Trinity Winchester. Szilard Kaski, a local stagecoach bus driver, and I apologise for my probable mispronunciation of his name, was nominated for his consistently cheerful and friendly manner. His nomination read, "There are many community heroes that who make life that little bit better for so many in the community with the small kindnesses that they perform day in, day out." Miranda Rocksmith of Rocket Launch PR was nominated for her work on the Tinnathan fundraising campaign. She said, "I was proud to attend this joyous event and receive a Mayor of Winchester Community Award on behalf of all those who have helped organise and participate in Tinnathan. We've raised a staggering £50,000 for Winchester Hospice and Wessex Cancer Support over the last 5 years in honour of Tina Jury, our great friend." Councillor Angela Clear said, "It was my very great pleasure to meet many unsung heroes and organisations from our district at this year's Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards. I was so impressed by their efforts and hard work in their local communities, and I send my congratulations to all of those who were nominated. Thank you for making such a positive difference to other people's lives in Winchester."
Student helping people to face their challenges. A University of Winchester student has been spending time on her phone to support people facing mental health and loneliness challenges. Olivia Cochran, a 21-year-old psychology student, is a remote support worker for Hammersley Homes, a charity supporting adults with enduring mental health problems and those who suffer with loneliness. Ms. Cochran from Hailsham, East Sussex, helps three individuals, calling weekly to provide a sympathetic ear to their worries and solve any issues they struggle with. She said, "At the beginning, it was quite daunting having to appear confident and competent, but I have become more confident and I think I know how to talk to people with problems, and I think this comes across." Her BSc psychology course at the university, she said, has helped her in her volunteering role and vice versa. She added, "It's given me a great understanding of mental health issues. It's one thing reading about these issues, but it's quite different when you see people experiencing them for real." 3 years back, Ms. Cochran suffered from stress and anxiety due to a severe swimming injury which left her with permanent nerve damage. She tore the trapezius muscle at the base of her neck, which means she sometimes has difficulty walking and must take painkillers. The unfortunate incident inspired her to study psychology at university. She said, "I became interested in psychology whilst reading about the workings of the brain after my injury." Ms. Cochran hopes to pursue a career in clinical psychology. After completing her course, she will embark on a 4-month paid internship with Change 100, a scheme run by Leonard Cheshire to work with people dealing with mental health issues. Louise Hallett, a founder and trustee of Hammersley Homes, said, "We rely heavily on people like Olivia to volunteer with us and help us to support some of the vulnerable people we work with. Olivia has been amazing and has made a real difference to the lives of the people she calls each week, offering a listening ear and some friendship." Dr. Joe Subbersfield, senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Winchester, who leads the department's volunteering module, said, "Volunteering provides an excellent opportunity for students to get outside of our lecture theatres and labs and to put their knowledge and training into practice."
And here we have a revamp for busy public loo. The refurbishment of one of the city's most used public toilets has begun. A major district-wide programme is underway following widespread criticism of the state of the conveniences. As previously reported, Julian Perkins addressed Winchester City Council's cabinet about his experience of using the disabled toilets in Market Lane, the busiest in the district. Mr. Perkins of Hydegate Hyde said there was no toilet roll which caused him difficulties. This came before the Chronicle received a letter from resident Wendy Hunt saying, "Our local toilets must be a health hazard and something should be done." The refurbishment of the public toilets is now underway, beginning with the loos on Market Lane next to St. Morris's Covert. The work began on Monday, March the 18th. The work includes replacing toilet pans and seats, new basins with aerated taps, new chrome pipework to urinals, replacing sanitary ware throughout the accessible toilet, and replacing the floor vinyl bins and damaged panelling, as well as through a thorough environmental clean throughout. Following the completion of the work in Market Lane, the next loos due for refurbishment currently looks set to be in Bishop's Waltham and Abbey Gardens in Winchester. The council operates 10 toilets across the district, with another in Middlebrook Street currently closed due to a chronic antisocial behaviour.
The council is to sell off 3 city buildings. Hampshire County Council will be selling 3 of its buildings in Winchester, with staff able to work from fewer sites. Three Ministers House in Winchester High Street, 4 Chimneys Family Centre near Andover Road, and a property on the County Council's Monarch Way site near Romsey Road will soon be on the market. The buildings will close to staff later this year, and services will be moved to other County Council buildings in Winchester. Many people working in council offices spend a large amount of their time working in the community with the people who need them, delivering services such as social care to vulnerable children and adults. A higher number of staff also work remotely since the pandemic, and this means the County Council believes it can accommodate the same number of staff in fewer buildings, providing an opportunity to make savings on running costs. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "We've always carefully monitored the use of our buildings to ensure they remain cost-effective and to release savings whenever possible. And we've been reviewing our office accommodation to understand the opportunities for further reductions, which will reduce recurring revenue costs and ensure the way we work remains efficient and effective. It's vitally important that people can access public services near to where they live, and it's crucial we maintain good public access where it's needed. But when it comes to the functions that are delivered behind the scenes in our offices, it makes sense to look at how these spaces fit our future needs. We are keeping our staff, who are located in these buildings, regularly informed as plans progress. We also ensure relocations are made with minimal disruption to local services or to our residents. Most of the services to be relocated are office functions. They're not generally visited by the public. However, there are a few services that are currently visited by local people, and these will be moved to other locations within Winchester that are accessible by public transport. In 2023, a review was undertaken to address the extra office capacity and find opportunities to reduce the number of buildings and associated facilities. The review found that the County Council could do so by moving surfaces, developing new working methods, and using retained buildings more efficiently. Office block Capital House in Andover Road, Winchester, was sold last year to Southampton University for Winchester School of Art.
Two workers trapped in overturned road sweeper. A section of the M3 motorway was shut after a road sweeper vehicle overturned, trapping two workers inside. At around 6:45 a.m. on Monday, March the 25th, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service were called to a two-vehicle crash between Junction 10, the Chilcombe Interchange, and Junction 11, Hockley Cross Interchange, near Winchester on the M3. The fire service said two people were trapped in a vehicle. A section of the M3 was closed as a large amount of diesel spilt from the overturned road sweeper onto the surface of the motorway. National Highways warned drivers on the M3 to expect delays and check their route before travelling. A fire service spokesman said, Winchester, Eastleigh, Redbridge and Basingstoke firefighters were called at 6:45 a.m. The crews stabilised the vehicles and made the scene safe as they assisted two casualties who were trapped. Both casualties were passed into the care of South Central Ambulance Service paramedics.
Date set for Rhodes' controversial move. January 2026 has been announced as the date for the hugely controversial diversion of Andover Road through the Kingsbarton Estate. The estate developer Carla must switch the main road onto Winchester Avenue and close the existing Andover Road to all but cyclists and pedestrians when 650 homes are completed on the 2,000 home development. The Kingsbarton Forum, held virtually, heard that currently 562 homes are registered for council tax, an increase of 41 in the last 6 months. Ian Curry, Carla Technical Director, said preparations are ongoing for the complicated processes involved in diverting a main road. He said, "It is a complex process, but we are looking to have the road open and the Andover Road closed early in 2026 January, caveated with the legal process. The switch was part of the planning permission given by the Secretary of State in 2012. City Councillor Patrick Cunningham, member for Wanston and Mitchell-Dever, asked if the old Andover Road could be kept open for 999 calls. Why should emergency vehicles go through Winchester Avenue when there is an alternative available? Mr. Curry said there would be emergency access via Winchester Avenue and that keeping Andover Road open to 999 calls was not appropriate or viable. Mike Slynn, chairman of the Kingsbarton Residents Association, said he had seen a letter from the County Council leader Rob Humby saying the road could be kept open for buses. The Chronicle reported in January 2022 that as part of the Winchester Movement strategy, it had been suggested that bus access for proposed Northern Park and Ride on the Andover Road corridor could be maintained alongside the proposed walking and cycling route, but no firm plans for this ever emerged. Mr. Curry denied the County Council was considering keeping the road open by shaking his head over the virtual meeting. City Councillor Jane Rutter, member for the Worthies, asked about the road safety on Winchester Avenue. Mr. Curry responded, "We keep saying it goes through four road safety audits. Four, not one, four." Councillor Rutter said, "I'm not sure what road safety audits look at, but it's not cycling and walking." The Kingsbarton Residents Association, KBRA, is contesting the diversion, and Mr. Slynn said the likely development of the Sir John Moore Barracks once the army departs made it even more important not to divert the main road through the estate. Forum Chairman Councillor Mike Cremoisen said it was clear from the City Council, County Council and Secretary of State that the diversion has planning permission and would need a new application to change it. And this is accompanied by photographs of the four of them having the debate via headphones, including Jane Rutter, one of our readers. And at the bottom is a photo of the Winchester Avenue itself, with Mike Slynn, who has been fighting for it at the start, of the proposed rather small new Winchester Avenue going through all the new houses, which are mostly lived in by families, instead of the Andover Road, which is currently used at the moment. And when you look at that picture, it does make you wonder about the diversion.
Response to vision delights civic chiefs. Civic chiefs have been delighted by the public response to a unique community initiative in Winchester. The Winchester suburb of Fulflood is the first place in the Livable Neighbourhood scheme in Hampshire. It aims to find the best way to reduce city centre traffic, support healthier lifestyle choices, and invest in infrastructure to support sustainable growth. The City Council has been asking Fulflood residents for their ideas. There was a big turnout for the first event at St Paul's Church on February the 27th, and a second was planned for Ashburton Hall, Sussex Street, on Monday, March the 18th. Council leader Martin Todd said he was delighted by the turnout on February the 27th. "We are holding these community workshops to capture people's concerns, where it is hard to cross the road, where people feel unsafe, where traffic speeds are too high. This is a pilot. We will aim to roll it out. This is the start of something, the first one in Hampshire. We're hoping we can proceed with it at pace and help improve our wonderful city and make it an even better place to live." Councillor Todd said any resulting proposal would use the Community Infrastructure Levy, CIL, money, paid by developers as part of the planning process. "There has been huge development in the St Paul ward, such as on Chilbolton Avenue and the police headquarters," said Councillor Todd. "West End Terrace has not changed, even though there are now hundreds of people crossing the road. Hopefully we will see proposals for Chilbolton Avenue. There is much more traffic, and yet the road has not changed. There is now more pressure on Westgate School and Cheriton Road." The initiative fits in with the vision for Winchester discussed at the town forum. Councillor Todd said the Living Neighbourhoods is a relatively low-cost idea that has local people's ideas at heart. The vision aims to empower the community, such as the work restoring St Giles Hill being done by a charity, the Friends of St Giles Hill. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the council was surprised when the vision of Winchester was being drawn up in 2020 to 21. "The key message was people wanted us to do lots of little things. They were not impressed by major change, but lots of little things that would make residents' lives better." And she cited King's Walk, which the council has revamped. "Relatively small changes can transform an area and make a difference to how people use them." Councillor Jamie Scott said what he liked was that this vision was not just gathering dust as unwanted leaflets, but evolving, allowing people to see something tangible happening to the city.
Probe into mystery of dead wildlife continues. Police are continuing to investigate after the dead bodies of around 50 hares, a kestrel and a barn owl were strewn outside a Probe into mystery of dead wildlife continues. Police are continuing to investigate after the dead bodies of around 50 hares, a kestrel and a barn owl were strewn outside a community shop. Test Valley Cops has said officers are actively progressing all lines of inquiry to find the offenders and were continuing to carry out reassurance patrols in Broughton on March the 18th. The animal bodies were found outside Broughton Community Shop in High Street on the morning of Friday, March the 15th. On Sunday, March the 17th, officers found a burnt-out Suzuki Grand Vitara, which they believed is linked to the incident. Country Watch Sergeant Stuart Ross has warned that the offenders will face the full force of the law. He said, "We know the effect this incident has had on the local community. To be clear, mindless criminal acts such as this one will not be tolerated. Those responsible will face the full force of the law and consequences for their actions. Crime in our rural communities can have a huge impact on the residents who live there and on the countryside in general. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary has a dedicated team of officers called Country Watch, whose main priority is to disrupt and tackle the crimes affecting our rural communities. We have a strong network of partners spanning the entire county, and together we deal with matters across the spectrum of rural offending, from organised criminal gangs who steal farming equipment to offences on the river network and crimes against wildlife. As well as this specialist team of rural crime officers, our neighbourhood and district policing teams also work within these rural communities. Our main message to the public is to continue to report these crimes and incidents that occur. If you see any suspicious activity, vehicles or people in your area, please get in touch. Your information could assist us in building our intelligence picture to then effectively deploy our resources to disrupt and target those involved in rural crime." And there is a photograph here of, I counted as quickly as I was able, 40 dead hares and other animals outside the village shop, just all lying on the ground. Absolutely horrendous.
And Camera Festival's back. After a wait of more than 4 years, the Camera Winchester Beer and Cider Festival will take place in 2024. The last festival finished the week before the country went into lockdown for COVID in March 2020. Now the festival will return on Friday, June the 7th and Saturday, June the 8th at a new venue at Winchester University Student Union in Sparkford Road. Up to 77 cask real ales will be showcased alongside a selection of craft beers and a range of cider. The new location will allow room to offer more seating across two floors, as well as a large outside terrace, allowing customers to enjoy a tipple in the summer sun. All beers will be located in one space, and a breakout room will enable a permanent, quiet session where customers can chat to friends over a pint. Four sessions will be running this year on Friday, June the 7th, from 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., before an evening session on the same day taking place between 6 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. where live music will also be on offer. On Saturday, June the 8th, a quiz and acoustic set will be running from 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. with the Saturday evening session from 6 p.m. until 10:30 p.m. seeing more live music.
Awards for improving the lives of others. It's a short item, but it has a photograph of about 20 people, including a uniformed officer with a dog. PCC Donna Jones with the award winners is the title of the photograph. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner has thanked volunteers, staff and partners from across the county in an annual award ceremony. The Police and Crime Commissioner Awards, dedicated to recognising those who've helped make communities safer and improved the lives of others, were held on Friday, March the 8th. And this year's event, hosted by PCC Donna Jones in Winchester, was the third ceremony.
Record crowds at College Careers Fair. Peter Simmons College's annual Progression Fair attracted more than 1,500 students. Held at Mercer's Sports Hall, more than 80 exhibitors, including universities, accountants, architectural firms, the NHS and the armed forces, provided students with a diverse range of opportunities beyond sixth form. For the first time, the college added a quiet slot for students with mobility issues or crowd anxiety. They also introduced a support hub, offering help from professionals such as Refugee Education UK, university transition teams, and international admissions staff. Debbie Mahoney, head of careers, said it was fantastic to see so many motivated students gathering so much information from such a diverse range of exhibitors, as well as showcasing the degree courses, higher and degree apprenticeships, training and employment opportunities on offer. We highlighted how to access the practical information that would enable the all-important successful transition from sixth form college onwards. The day was a whirlwind of activity, and the careers team has already seen an increase in appointment requests as a result of it. The fair came after a recent careers day, which had 150 specialist talks from industry professionals.
And here we have the singer and photographer who aims to inspire others. Photographer and singer Rob Newman arrived in Basingstoke with his family in 1973 through the Greater London Expanding Town scheme, which provided him with a home and a job. Over the 50 years he has spent here, Mr. Newman developed strong roots and a great passion for the town, inspiring him to record and photograph modern Basingstoke. Rob came to Basingstoke with hopes for a new and better life and claims that he has never been disappointed. He said, "It's given me everything." His three passions in life are Basingstoke, photographing Basingstoke, and singing around Basingstoke. He has provided free entertainment with his musical partner Leanne, who is a pianist for local care homes, charities, and community organisations. Facebook group Basingstoke's Heritage Captured, which is Rob Newman's website for his passions, started in 2018 and focuses on Basingstoke's people, architecture, nature, transport, historical and memorable events and much more. Despite a slight change of pace during the pandemic, Basingstoke's Heritage Captured is still going strong and has numerous updates. In 2023, Rob gained the confidence to begin singing in public inspirational songs from films and musicals, with his goal of enriching local culture through street entertainment and performing arts. He can be heard in various locations around Basingstoke, including Fountain Square, Basingstoke Railway Station, the Haymarket Theatre and the Town Square. Mr. Newman stresses the importance of music and hopes singing songs which may link people to memories will help those who may be struggling with depression or dementia. Mr. Newman also set his ambitions towards the Rob Newman Foundation for inspiring the young people of Basingstoke, with the aim of mentoring people aged between 16 to 25 to become the best, most outstanding people they can be. He said, "Everyone has hidden talent. If you have low self-confidence, perhaps you can find something deep inside yourself that you're good at and bring this out yourself. You will then be valued by others and have a better life." Any donations Mr. Newman receives for his singing and entertaining are made available to his foundation in discretionary grants. Mr. Newman's passion and love for the town is made clear, be it by singing, entertaining, photography, or working through the Rob Newman Foundation for inspiring the young people of Basingstoke. And this article, which was written by Kaz Woodward Bridget from Peter Simmons College as part of the News Quest's Young Reporter Scheme, has a photograph, of course, of Rob Newman singing outside the Willis Museum in Basingstoke.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you have finished with it. So, thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. And goodbye from us, Heather.
Goodbye.
John.
Goodbye.
Jane.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope the spring weather will begin to improve soon. Goodbye.